Bramlick, we are live inside the Priority One Security Series, part of the number one security.com. Priority One Security, serious security. This hour also brought to you by our friend Brian Massey, the CEO of IQ Capital Strategy, where there's no customer service number for account updates. You just call Brian directly. He's handling your money. That's the good part about Brian, is that he's got a Wall Street level strategy that he's bringing down to Main Street that's more accessible to you. Because he's more accessible to you. Look, he's been in the business for decades. He knows how it works. And he also knows how to minimize your losses and maximize your gains while your money is being managed. And he's going to let you sort of set the tone based on your the level of readiness. But he's got a different way of doing it. I'm really impressed with the way he's thought it out and really quite intrigued at his process and impressed by the way that he's going about it. You will be too, I can promise you. Just sit down with Brian and ask him some questions. He'd love to go over it for you, about 30 minutes, and there's no obligation. You can set up your free consultation today. Go by and see him, 735 North Townville Street in Seneca, or call him 848-CAPITAL. That's 848-227-4825. That's IQ Capital Strategy. Our very good friend, Will Vandervoort, joins the program with ClemsonInsider.com. Check out TCI for all kinds of updates, including we're going to get into a lot of coronavirus-related stuff, but it's not limited to that. You get recruiting updates and all kinds of good stuff there. They had a sit-down with Brad Brownell recently. There was some really good stuff out of that. Willie V joins us right now. You can follow him on Twitter, at SteelerWill. What's up, Willie V?
Hey, guys. I don't know if y'all like me, but I've used this time with the whole COVID-19 stuff to, like, put floats on the bottom of my house, so that way I can, as I'm floating down the street here in Seneca, so that way my house can at least move and I don't, you know, don't flood it away, just floats. Because, I mean, it has been pouring here the last 3 days.
It's incredible. Look, that's they're not going to let us gather in big groups, so that's the way we do parades now, is we just float our houses down the road. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I actually just floated past yours.
I thought I saw a crazy guy waving on the porch, but I really just thought it was a double wide. I wasn't sure. Here's this. First things first, I know there was a Board of Trustees meeting today. We were kind of monitoring it during our first couple of hours. Anything that you saw there that caught your eye in terms of what the board was discussing today, anything President Clement said that's important for us?
Well, I think the main thing is they gave the first date. So we know June 1st is the date in which they're going to, you know, try to start beginning to open things back up. So phase one, as the police chief said, you know, I think with President Clements, you know, the thing that kind of stuck out to me is he said, you know, they still plan to open campus, you know, for fall semester. And, you know, they would have classes, normal classes, and you know, I think I looked it up. August 19th, I think, is the first day of classes for Clemson. So, you know, this whole plan, they put out three phases today. Phase one, as I said, to begin June 1st, and then that would start a 14-day period where they watch the number of cases in the area and see if that number continues to go down, if it or, you know, or stay where it's at now. And if things continue to stay like they're doing now, then they would, you know, start phase two 2 weeks after that. And then phase two would be, so phase one basically is they're going to have, quote, some, you know, maintenance staff, people of those to kind of get the campus ready to go. So it's going to be a small group of employees they're going to allow to come back so they can get the campus ready for when phase two begins. So that's kind of what they're going to do there. Phase two is going to be kind of more where they're going to bring more of the faculty and staff back, and then you will see facilities start opening. And that is my interpretation, is that could be when we start seeing maybe the possibility of at least the conversation of student athletes coming back on campus, because they said they're going to open up, you know, rec and gymnasiums and rec department stuff, and then also, you know, other facilities around campus. So that would kind of in line with that. And then phase three would begin, I would assume, 2 weeks after that if everything continues to go well. And so you're looking at maybe right around the 1st of July, and then that would kind of incorporate how they would transition into the start of fall semester. So as the police chief said, this will be the new normal, if you will. And this could go on for an extended period of time, he said. So it could, you know, you could see this last all the way till the start of fall camp, I mean fall semester.
Willie V, of course, we all want to hope and We can even try to assume that things are going to go well. And then, of course, if they don't, you enact other things. But was there any talk of, okay, if you don't pass through phase one and get to phase two, what is that going to do for the school year and what is that going to do for football? Was there any talk of that?
There really wasn't. It was more like, you know, here's what our plan is. We're going to monitor it. And then I think they'll act accordingly. And so basically, if there's a decline in phase, so June 1st, they're going to start, you know, phase one. And so that's 14 days from that period. So you would think June 15th. If things were to say, let's say a couple more cases broke out in the area, in Pickens or Seneca or Anderson, you know, you might see this, you know, they come out and say, okay, we're going to extend phase one through another couple more weeks. And I think that's how they're going to do it, Kelly. So they're just going to take it step by step as it comes along, and with the hope that things continue to go like it is right now. So there's no real plan. The university hasn't set a date to when, you know, people, an exact definite date to when people are going to be able to get back, other than the June 1st phase one starting. So you just kind of hope for the best. And I think it leaves the door open, Kelly, if something does happen and we do take a step back, that there's not going to be a position where all of a sudden you get a dramatic shutdown like we had back in March.
Visit with Will Vandenbort for theclemsoninsider.com. Another thing, I saw this quote tweeted out. It may have been Grace or Anna Hickey, one of those that we follow on Twitter, threw this quote out during the meeting, where it was essentially saying, from President Clemens, saying that we were in about as good a position as anybody when this thing started. And so they've been able to kind of identify areas that they can, you know, make cuts or do the things that need to be done to sort of momentarily stifle whatever drop off there might be, and then be able to usher in this new era. Did you sense that type of confidence today in some of the commentary that maybe Clemson was better positioned than most because of their financial situation and maybe their preparedness? And so maybe the brunt that they felt wasn't quite as hard. The hit that they took wasn't quite as vast and expansive as some of the other universities. I'm specifically thinking about Furman and some of the dramatic steps that they decided that they needed to take as a university yesterday.
Yeah, I think they were, and I think it was more of a, you know, and then the board of trustees, actually, the chairman actually even complimented President Clemens and his staff for the job that they have done through all this because, you know, just from what I do from an athletic standpoint, Clemson was ready when all this went down, and they had a plan of action, and they took those steps accordingly, and President Clemens mentioned how they had a plan together, you know, just in case COVID-19 were to hit this area, and they felt like they were ready for that, and they took the proper measures, and they felt like the online classes were a success this year, and that you know, because they were ready, they think it helped the student transition easier into those situations. And so all in all, when you look at it from a university standpoint and from an athletic standpoint, yeah, they're, I think they were very pleased with where the school is at, you know, on both sides of the campus, and how things have been run and how they've handled things and things of that nature to this point.
Willie V, was there any mention of fall break or Thanksgiving break? Because we've seen Notre Dame announce this, South Carolina announced that they're going to do away with fall break. South Carolina even announced that they're not going to have students back after Thanksgiving break to try to slow a possible spread. Did you hear anything about that?
No, Kelly, they weren't prepared to release anything of that nature.
Okay.
Today was just about telling, you know, what their plan is and that they are on schedule to start classes normally in the fall with students on campus, as I should say normally, because we still don't know what that normal is, as they said. But, you know, they do plan to start classes on August 19th. And so all that is all they really said. They didn't go into any more specifics of like South Carolina did, because Clemson still hasn't. I think they want to get to at least some point in those phases that they've talked about today before they release more and more of their strategy. And today was more just about updating the board on the phases and where they're at now and how they're going to begin the process on June 1st of getting back to some sort of normal on campus. And so, you know, I'm sure, Kelly, you know, we should probably start hearing a little bit more about those kind of things as they get closer and closer. You know, as we mentioned last night on the report I had, you know, the athletic side of it, you know, they're I've been told, you know, they're very hopeful that There'll be the players, the student athletes will definitely be back, you know, on campus by, you know, by that July 15th date that they really want to be on, because, you know, you want to have that time period to have enough time to practice. And so that feels like they feel real confident that all this stuff's going to happen and that they're going to be, you know, they're on schedule to have a football season. Right now, some good news of the last 2 days. I think today was good news, but as far as specific goes, they didn't really get too much into any specific dates or what they were going to do with fall breaks and things of that nature.
You know, it's interesting, and as a follow-up there, it's interesting that South Carolina's already come out with all that stuff. Clemson says they're not quite prepared. Speculate for us a little bit. Based on what you're hearing.
I wouldn't say they didn't say they weren't quite prepared. They're just not releasing that at this time.
So I
wouldn't say, so the wording there we got to be careful with. We don't want to say they weren't prepared because that's not what they said.
Sure. That I think that's fair. Do you foresee, given how – I mean, the coronavirus response has often been sort of on a state-by-state basis. Would you be surprised if Clemson went to more of that South Carolina model this year, in keeping with sort of that theme of the states are going to kind of operate on the same page, particularly given that both are public institutions to some degree? Would you be surprised if Clemson follows that same path?
No, I won't be. I think you know, with what South Carolina is doing down there, I think it's obvious, right? I mean, that's your state brethren. You both still work for the same university state system, and, you know, you're working off the state government. And so I would imagine, you know, Clemson's taking, you know, the precautions that Jim Clements and his people think are the best thing and the best way to do it. But I think ultimately, you know, they'll begin to open things up, and it will probably be on par to what we're probably seeing down there in Columbia. I mean, I don't know that firsthand. That's just me speculating. But, you know, just going by the history, as we know, between these two state institutions and how they do things, history tells me probably eventually in the end, you're probably going to see a similar kind of deal, I would imagine. Let's just say this from an athletic competition standpoint. They're both in the same state. And actually, Clemson, from a COVID-19 situation, is actually better situation than it is going on in Columbia. So if things are open up in Columbia where – their football program is starting practice, you can't tell me that Clemson isn't going to want to start moving in that direction pretty soon too, because they're not going to like it that their chief rival down there is able to do some things that they're not going to. I'm just sorry, from a competition standpoint, I can't see Clemson standing by and not getting itself up to speed with where South Carolina would be in that regard from a competition standpoint.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I think they will have to mirror each other to a certain extent, and so we'll continue to monitor both things there. Willie V, our main topic on the show today has been most heartbreaking loss that you've seen in person as a fan. Do you have any to add to this discussion?
Yeah, so there's a lot. So you go deep into this, you know, from when I was a kid and, you know, up through adulthood and then with my Steelers, obviously. But we're keep it with the Clemson thing. People know my background, that I grew up in a Clemson family. So I would say probably the most heartbreaking one for me was when I was younger, when I was a young teenager, and Clemson lost to South Carolina in that 1987 game when it was a matchup. The first time both teams were matched up in the top 10, and Clemson went down to Columbia and took the ball and scored immediately. And let's just say that the fans didn't treat me very nice that day in Columbia. Surprise. Clemson took the ball, opening kickoff, went, I think, 90 yards or so to score the touchdown and took a 7-0 lead. And then after that, it was all South Carolina. And Clemson fans will remember this game as the Rodney game, where the Gamecock fans chanted Rodney, Rodney, over and over again, you know, just, you know, to get under his skin and to get under Clemson's skin, because Rodney was from Irmo, is from Irmo, South Carolina, and, you know, grew up in that area. And so they let it be known that they beat them and they beat a Clemson team. And it was South Carolina won the game 27. Rodney threw an interception to Brad Edwards that he returned for a touchdown in that game that sealed it for South Carolina late in the fourth quarter. So it was, that's probably number one on my list, Kelly. as a young kid, just remembering how how heartbreaking that was, that in a game of that magnitude. And it was. It was a top 10 matchup, first time both teams were ranked that high going into it. It was on ESPN. I think it was the first time ever ESPN and the Clemson-South Carolina game was shown nationally as well. Yeah, I remember that. It was pretty bad.
Willie V, we appreciate it, my man. It occurred to me when you were saying that, a lot of the games that we have brought up, either the two of us or the numerous callers and texters and tweeters today, you were working. You've been working so many years. Like, you got to be impartial at these things.
Yeah, and if I talk about bad losses for Clemson, the games that I've covered, I would say probably the worst one is the 2004 Georgia Tech game for Clemson fans. Because... Now, it wasn't a national championship game or anything like that, and I'm sure those games hurt fans as well. But I just remember how the air was sucked out of that stadium that day and how when that punt went over, you know, it looked like Charlie Whitehurst had won the game and he slid a little too early, and then they couldn't get that 1 yard after that. And then, you know the punt goes over, the snap goes over his head and down to, what, the 4 yard line or something, and then Calvin Johnson was Calvin Johnson. And it was a crazy, and Clemson had a 10-point lead with 2 minutes to go in the game.
10-point lead, and Reggie Ball threw the first touchdown to Calvin Johnson with a minute 50 left.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. So it was, cause remember Reggie Merriweather that broke off that long touchdown? You thought the game was over at that point. And
that's right.
It was just. It's still the craziest ending to a football game I've ever experienced, and the air was sucked out of the stadium in Death Valley, and I'm sure there were a lot of unhappy campers going home that night. But for me, I was working, and definitely I was in work mode. And at that point, you don't cover. I wasn't a Clemson fan anymore at that point. I was a worker, working a game from a newspaper that I was working for. So you got to get the job done, got to get the story out. And as we are trained to do as journalists, as all you guys the same way. So. I taught you that a long time ago, Quark. So you gotta take your partial, you gotta take that bias out of it, and do your job.
That's correct. Covered a lot of Clemson and Daniel down the middle because you got to. Willie V.
Yeah, you've done a good job of it, man. I'm proud of you.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that very much. Will Vandervoort.
And you too,
not
Kelly.
Only
you too, Kelly.
Thanks, Willie V.
not only does he come here and give great analysis, but he also he will also give us plaudits without pay and without nudging. He does it all of his own volition, of the goodness of his heart. So we appreciate that. Appreciate it, my man. Always a pleasure to visit with you. If you do float down the road, make sure you can float on back. Don't go too far downhill so you have to row the house back, okay?
Yeah, I got to figure a way to get a motor put on the back of this thing, and then we can get rolling. That way I can go anywhere I want to. That way it's easier to go to the store that way. You know what I'm saying?
Correct. Hey, if you float by my house again, why don't you ring the doorbell? How about that?
We'll do, man. You guys take care, man. Proud of both of you guys.
All right, thanks very much, Willie V. We appreciate that. That was so nice.
It's a whole new meaning to the word houseboat.
Correct. Hey-o! That's what I'm talking about. Kelly, that was a great interview from Will Vandervoort. Stay with us. Hump Day headlines. I know you've been waiting on this rainy Wednesday. They are coming up next.
Our homes have been lived in more than ever. Restore your home back to its glory with the help of Zero Res Carpet and Air Duct Cleaning. Get 3 rooms of carpet cleaned for only $129, plus a complimentary cleaning and disinfecting of common touch services. Visit ZeroResGreenville.com.
Rely on EnviroMulch for your outdoor project. With all the rain we've had, they can help with rock crush and run along with 57 stone for your erosion, flooding driveway, and water pooling issues. Order online at EnviroMulchOnline.com.
Granger Nissan of Anderson is not only the home with a lifetime warranty, but the winner of the 2017 and 2018 Nissan Award of Excellence. Granger Nissan is here to serve the upstate with excellent service and competitive pricing. With the largest selection of Nissans in the upstate, Granger Nissan is sure to have what you need in stock and ready to drive off the lot today. Granger Nissan of Anderson at 3510 Clemson Boulevard, only 25 miles from Greenville, and always online at GrangerNissanOfAnderson.com.
Roosters Men's Grooming Center believes a man deserves a space of his own when it comes to grooming. Roosters offers the charm and comfort of a classic American barbershop, but updated to accommodate the 21st century man. Our professional stylists and barbers will make sure you receive the customized barbershop experience through classic haircuts, shaves, and products that reaffirm what it means to look and feel great. Roosters at the Plaza on Pelham. Book your appointment today at 884-8920.
You're scared. You cannot pay your credit cards. You cannot pay your medical bills. Someone suggests to you debt consolidation, combining them all in one payment. Can you really afford that? Is there something else you can do? Call me and see if bankruptcy can help you. Call me, Robert King. Together, we will look for a thoughtful solution to your legal problem.
Thompson & King, 300 South Tower Street in Anderson. Call 222-0200 or online at thompsonking.com. Thompson & King is a debt relief agency helping people file for bankruptcy under the bankruptcy code.
At Sprint, we understand saving money for your family is now more important than ever. That's why we're offering our best unlimited deal. Switch and get four lines of unlimited for just $100 a month. That's right, four lines for $100. Plus, the plan includes Hulu, 500 megabytes of mobile hotspot, DVD quality streaming, and more. If that's not enough, we're throwing in four Samsung Galaxy phones on us. And now, Sprint customers enjoy access to expanded coverage on the T-Mobile network. Shop from the comfort of your home at Sprint.com, call 800-SPRINT-1, or come see us in our stores. Phone after $35.42 per month credit for 18 months credit. Apply within two bills. If canceled early, remaining balance due. Unlimited basic after $731.21. Pay $35 per month per line with autopay. Data deprioritization during congestion. Coverage and offer not available everywhere. Excludes taxes, fees, and roaming. Speed maximums, use rules, $30 activation fee, and restrictions apply.
Your family's health is number one, and that's yet another reason to feed them with the freshest meats, poultry, seafood, and produce from the Corner Butcher in Clemson. Highly recommended on social media, the Corner Butcher offers exceptional quality product, great personal service, and it's all prepared right there in the store. Fillets, briskets, strips, chicken, seafood, and fresh produce. Your family will thank you for healthy food, and you'll be supporting local business. The Corner Butcher, Patrick Square, Clemson.
Missed a show? No worries. Catch every hour of every show on our webpage, WCCPFM.com. We are The Roar.
Out of Bounds, hour number three continues. Before we get to some hump day headlines, which I know is what you guys have been waiting for, and you got to give the people what they want. Another business that gives the people what they want is Tiger Moving Company. They do an absolutely great job. They're the best movers in the business, the best movers in the upstate by far. TigerMovingGreenville.com is the website. South Carolina's trusted, clean-cut moving company. They do residential moving, commercial moving. They'll do local and long-distance moving, now serving 48 states via third-party, furniture assembly, item loading, and junk removal. They also are taking this COVID situation very seriously. They're taking all the necessary precautions. You can read all about that on their website at tigermovinggreenville.com, but they are prepared to continue to do their job during all this, during this pandemic. You can also give them a call at 864-908-9028. You can email them. That's a good way to book your move at tigermoving@gmail.com. And they have trucks named after Tiger greats. The Fridge truck, the CJ truck, the Deshaun truck, the Dabo truck, and our new favorite, the Big Mac truck, named after Eric McLean, which I think is a funny play on words. Anyway, TigerMovingGreenville.com is the website. They've moved me. They've moved Kwok. They've done an absolutely wonderful job. If you're in need of a mover, look no further than TigerMovingGreenville.com.
Kelly, it's time. Let's hear the camel.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Julie, hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on. I know you can hear me. Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Hump Day Headlines is brought to you by QE Financial Group. They're here to help you get over the financial humps of life, such as saving for retirement, navigating the roller coaster markets, or building your investment plan. Whether you are old or young, they can smooth out the financial humps. Call Greg Wales today for a free consultation at 864-654-5043. That's Greg Wales at QE Financial Group, 864-654-5043. Kwok, let's start with a former basketball player here at Clemson, Horace Grant, who is not happy at all with The Last Dance, with how he was portrayed, and with how other people were portrayed. Here's the headline from ESPN. Horace Grant says Michael Jordan lied in The Last Dance, calls him, quote, a snitch, end quote. Let me read you some of these quotes, and you just tell me what you think, okay?
Because Horace is mad.
He went in. He went in on this. So he starts with this first quote, lie about the fact that Horace Grant was the leak or the mole to the Jordan Rules book. If MJ had a grudge with me, let's settle this like men. Let's talk about it. Or we can settle it another way. But yet he still goes out and puts this lie out, which that I was the source behind the book. Sam and I have always been great friends. We're still great friends. But the sanctity of that locker room, I would never put anything personal out there. The mere fact that Sam Smith was an investigative reporter, that he had to have two sources to write a book, I guess. Why would MJ just point me out? It's only a grudge, man. I'm telling you, it was only a grudge. And I think he proved that during this so-called documentary. If you say something about him, he's going to cut you off. He's going to destroy your character. Then he mentions Charles Barkley. He says, Charles Barkley, they've been friends for over 20 or 30 years. And Charles said something about Michael's management with the Charlotte Hornets. And they haven't spoken since. My point is, he said I was the snitch, but yet, and still after 35 years, he brings up his rookie year, going into one of his teammates' rooms, seeing coke and weed and women. My point is, why the hell did he want to bring that up? What's that got to do with anything? I mean, if you want to call somebody a snitch, that's the dang snitch right there. End quote.
Couple things here, Kelly. Horse is a man.
He also has a quote about Scottie Pippen, but you can go ahead and give your thoughts.
First thing is, people have thought that Horace Grant was a source for Sam Smith for like 30 years.
Yeah, that's been a theory.
So maybe more people know that now. Maybe Michael didn't have to say it or they didn't have to put it in the documentary. But it's a thing that people have been thinking. If it's not true, then Horace maybe thought that people shut up about it, right? If it is true, maybe Horace thought people had shut up about it. You don't want to, you know, reopen that wound, so to speak. It is interesting, though. This, I think, is the most compelling argument that Horace Grant makes. Michael Jordan is consistently being a snitch, but will, like, totally cut you off if you say one word about him.
Right.
And that goes to part of the, yes, this documentary did paint Michael Jordan in a largely positive light. I think it is really interesting that he was concerned that it would make him look negative when in reality, I don't even know what he was concerned about. Like, I just think he was being really sensitive about some stuff. I'm not sure what he thought was in there that would make him look like such a horrible person. That's any worse than what people have said alongside it that makes him look even worse.
And the way the documentary was done and the fact that we know there was a deal between Adam Silver and Michael Jordan where they wouldn't release that content until Michael Jordan said so. It felt like Michael Jordan had the last say. And the way that the documentary was portrayed is, okay, we show the Isaiah Thomas beef, and then Jordan gets the last word, right? We show the beef with so-and-so, and Jordan gets the last word. It felt like Jordan always got the last word in that documentary. So I think that's a little bit of Horace Grant's concern. Let me read you what he says about Scottie Pippen. He says, quote, I have never seen a quote-unquote number two guy as decorated as Scottie Pippen portrayed so badly. In terms of the migraine, in terms of the 1.8 seconds, Jordan calling him selfish, I've never seen this in all of my life. Pip was out there in game 6 of the 98 finals. He could barely walk, got knocked down on his back, tried to do whatever he could to help the team. My point is, why was that 1.8 seconds in the documentary, so-called documentary, about Pip? MJ wasn't even on the team during that game. Why was that in there? We handled that year really well as a team. Pip knows he was wrong for it. Bill Cartwright stood up and said what he had to say, and then we handled it. It was over. We go on to take the Knicks to 7 games. It was over. Why bring that up? That's my question to everybody out there who's listening. And then what he said about the documentary, he said, when that so-called documentary is about one person, basically, and he has the last word on what's going to be put out there, it's not a documentary. It's his narrative of what happens in the last quote-unquote dance. That's not a documentary because a whole bunch of things were cut out, edited out. So that's why I call it a so-called documentary.
All right, I think Horace is being, I think he's being a little uncharitable here. I'm not mad at him, but I think he's being a little uncharitable because I think we all sort of understand that anytime anything comes out, somebody's perspective is going to be neglected. Book, podcast, movie, TV show, documentary, whatever, particularly when we're looking at history, it is hard to do a fair history without some sort of lean to one side or the other, to somebody's point of view. In this case, because of what you just talked about, it is going to lean heavily to Michael Jordan's side, but I think that Horace is being a little uncharitable here when he says, why was the Scotty 1.8 seconds even in there, all that stuff. Jason Hare, the director, was very clear. We talked about this where they were trying to do basically three things at once. The point of the documentary, the main point, was not that it was the tell-all Michael Jordan story. That was not the point of the documentary. In fact, he even said on a podcast I listened to yesterday, because I was trying to get some more background on this, he said if we had gone into Michael Jordan's allegedly tenuous relationship with marriage, with his relationship with his children, with his time playing with the Wizards, he said then it becomes a Michael Jordan documentary. And even though Jordan had the rights to the footage, even though he had the rights to say yay or nay, and he had a lot of editorial feedback that he gave and they used in the making of the documentary, it was not about him. It was about that last team.
Right. So you had to show how the Bulls got to that point. I understand
correct.
That.
And it really wasn't even about Horace Grant's teams. It was really about the last team.
Yeah, it was.
And the reason Horace Grant and B.J. Armstrong and Doug Collins and the reason that those Bulls were in it up to that point was to get it to sort of get it to 97-98 and get it to Rodman, Kerr, Kukoc, Jordan, Pippen, you know, all those guys, Bill Winnington, like all those guys that were on in 97-98.
I don't buy this, and I think a lot of people are running with this right now. I don't buy it that Pippen was that negatively portrayed. I know he's mad. We've heard quotes and sources say he's mad, and he's not out there promoting the documentary in any way, shape, or form. But all the things that they talked about, they actually happened, you know? I mean, yes, he had a migraine. It was unfortunate. He couldn't play. I don't think that necessarily makes him soft, but that did happen. He didn't go in the game. He refused to go in the game. He basically said, F all of y'all, and didn't go in the game. And yes, they still won, but he said he didn't regret that. He literally said, I'm not going to blank my summer up, so I'm not going to have surgery.
Right.
He said all these things. I still think he was portrayed fine. I still think he didn't look like that bad of a guy at all.
Because he also gutted it out in a game that they needed to win, where he's getting treated in the back. Like, to me, he's also the only one that gave any sort of charitable commentary, really, like, charitable commentary to Jerry Krause that also was critical of him. I think Steve Kerr said some nice stuff about Jerry Krause, but he never really dogged him. Pippen was the one that said before that they wanted to stick it to Tony Kukoc because of Jerry. Like, they wanted to make Jerry look as bad as possible, so he took it out on Kukoc. But then he said later, like, you know, some really flattering stuff about how he's got to be the best GM in the game. Yeah, I didn't think Pippen's portrayal was that negative. I do think that the negative portrayals of Michael Jordan in the documentary were not really, I felt like they were cut by people who are more dismissive of those things. For instance, and some of it has to do with the way that Jordan carried himself then. I mean, if you look, there was no, look, you can say impartial, whatever. LeBron James has nobody, Brian Windhorst doesn't jock sniff like Ahmad Rashad and Bob Costas jock sniff Michael Jordan in the 90s. There's no media member now that treats LeBron, even Windhorst, who sat at the table for many meetings with the family. He's never done anything close to Ahmad Rashad driving Jordan to games and Bob Costas fawning over Michael Jordan. Bob Costas and Ahmad Rashad being in the documentary means that every time something negative is said or thought about Jordan, they're going to provide context to defend Jordan. And I like Bob Costas, and I like Ahmad Rashad, and I watched NBA Inside Stuff with Ahmad Rashad and Summer Sanders every single week growing up. That was a big part of my childhood. Those guys are so pro-Michael, they can't possibly be totally impartial about it. They can be impartial about Pippen, and they can be impartial about Horace Grant, and it can be impartial about B.J. Armstrong, and it can be. It's a function of the time that there wasn't really media except for maybe Sam Smith, and even then I wouldn't say adversarial. He's just trying to tell the truth. Mm-hmm. There wasn't any adversarial media for Jordan. And so Jordan's gambling comes out. You had Andrea Kramer, who was over there like, I don't know, some of this stuff might have been connected. Then you got Bob Costas in the other breath that's like, it's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. I've never seen anything more ridiculous than to try to link all this blah, blah, blah. Scottie Pippen never got that from anybody.
It's almost, you know, the meme where it says, man yells at cloud. You know, yes. Like you're yelling at something that we all know that it's true. We all know that Michael Jordan is arguably the most beloved athlete of all time. And you can't say anything negative about him that's going to – it just bounces off of him, really.
Yeah.
And that's how it's always been. So I understand maybe Horace is frustrated with that. I think Horace has always been frustrated with that. I think Horace was frustrated that he wasn't treated – as, you know, a part of the big three on those first couple Bulls teams when he was an all-star, when they won those titles. That's why he left for Orlando. We've talked about all that. So I can see how their relationship isn't good. But I do think the one thing he points out that I would say is a somewhat fair criticism of Michael Jordan is the fact that he holds these grudges like crazy with people who are supposedly his friends. A guy like Charles Barkley. Part of that is, I don't know, there's more to that. I'm sure it's a much deeper conversation, but I can see how Horace Grant would be a little frustrated with that.
You mean the guy who totally fabricated a story to make him hate a person so much that he wanted to destroy him
it's
in a game?
It's not shocking, but he does.
Horace Grant makes a point, right?
If Horace Grant's being called a snitch, and we talk about how MJ outed all these dudes on the 80s Bulls that it was a traveling cocaine circus. Not that people didn't necessarily know that, but I don't know. I don't know if he had to say that. I understand what Horace Grant's saying there.
You're right about that. And look, Horace is correct. If you're going to out those dudes in the 80s, everybody on the team where somebody had to actually look at their family and be like, yeah, I was in there. You outed Scott Burrell, right? Was it Burrell he was talking about was out all the time, didn't need to sleep?
Yes, yes. He said, okay. You're out all the time. Like, yeah, it was on the plane.
Yeah, so even stuff from the 97-98, some footage that they used, Jordan's out here snitching on his teammates. Charles Barkley saying correct stuff, mind you, correct stuff about how Michael Jordan did in his non-playing jobs in basketball, and the guy doesn't talk to him again. I feel like you don't get to set up who is and isn't a snitch at this point and who is and isn't allowed to have a grudge or who isn't allowed to say whatever. I feel like Jordan's living in his own little world, and he gets to decide when the rules can be kept, and he gets to decide when they're going to be broken. And I understand that literally anybody else can be like, you know what, I want some say too. I feel like I should get some say on the rules here. Mm-hmm. Who gets to say what?
I think it's a natural human emotion to be frustrated by that. And how the story was told a little bit.
He went a little hard, too. And then he was
did.
Like, look.
He went a little hard.
If we're playing charity golf, you know, I think that we'd shake each other's hands and be cordial.
Yeah.
For real? Like, you just called him a snitch and basically said he's a horrible person and you're tired of him ruining your life for 20 years. That's what I got from Horace Grant, this particular thing. I'm glad you brought that up, Kelly. More Hump Day headlines in our final segment coming up next.
Hey, Tiger fans, Don Munson here, voice of the Clemson Tigers, and I want you to know there is no better way to support your Tigers than by being a member of IPTE. Membership starts at only $60 and provides critical support for our student athletes to be champions in the classroom and in athletic competition. Be a game changer and visit ClemsonTigers.com/IPTE or call 1-800-CLEMSON to join IPTE today.
The Blue Heron Restaurant, located in historic downtown Pendleton, is open for business, offering dine-in service. Enjoy your favorite menu items or that bottle of wine you've been craving. Char-grilled filet mignon, sushi, crab cakes, chicken wings, amaretto cheesecake, and so much more. Are you hungry yet? If you're not quite ready to dine in, call in a curbside order for pickup. To place your to-go order, call 864-653-3354 or 864-653-3364. Visit the Blue Heron on Facebook and Instagram for specials and updates.
You've heard talk about Harbin Lumber's strong customer service service and elite customer support. They know that time is make or break for you contractors and handymen. Harbin Lumber will walk you through the project from start to finish, providing your order in full and on time. Harbin Lumber will partner with you and find solutions that will not create costly issues and problems later. Call today at 353-5053. That's 353-5053. Harbin Lumber Company. All they need is an opportunity. They will earn the rest.
It's not too early to start thinking about new porch, patio, or pool furniture from the Craft Stove Storm Patio. America's best outdoor furniture by Lloyd Flanders, Hanamet Summer Classics, Resesto Recycled Plastic, and Palm Springs Rattan. You can place special orders now and have your furniture delivered in time for the warm weather that will be coming. Special preseason prices on all in-stock patio furniture at the Craft Stove Storm Patio, 3002 Wade Hampton Boulevard in Taylor's.
Craft Stove Storm and Patio.
If you're a mattress shopping, you must go visit Engineered Sleep on Congaree Road in Greenville. Each mattress is made in-house, and the showroom has the most popular models for you to try out. Engineered Sleep makes your mattress shopping easy. Every local mattress order is delivered to your house, and setup is free. Buy local and buy direct from the manufacturer. Visit EngineeredSleep.com for more information. That's EngineeredSleep.com. Sleep like a lamb, rise like a tiger.
It's Dabo again. One of the fastest growing crimes these days is package theft. We're all ordering more online, and a stack of boxes on your front porch can be quite the temptation. Priority One Security provides the protection you need with their video doorbell system. You can record any movement or answer the door from your smartphone, no matter where you are. Priority One, trust in us.
See us on the web at PriorityOneSecurity.com. That's Priority, the number one, Security.com. 888-407-SAFE.
That's the sound of disinfecting in your business and workplace. It's the sound of EnviroShield being applied by JanPro of the Western Carolinas to make your business safe and clean for your customers and your employees. Like never before, it's vitally important to have your business cleaned thoroughly with a CDC-approved, hospital-grade, broad-spectrum disinfectant like EnviroShield. This electrostatic spray uses a series of different spray models for specific areas and applications in your business. It's one of the most advanced and efficient disinfectants available anywhere. And JanPro of the Western Carolinas can bring it into your business. For a simple evaluation, call JanPro of the Western Carolinas, 864-458-3053. Get your business clean for your customers and your employees. Be prepared. Gain knowledge. Move forward with JanPro of the Western Carolinas.
Covering the upstate with a split back formation. 105.5, 97.5, and AM 1560. We are the Roar.
Sing my Sarah.
Segment of the program. Glad to have you with us. And we go right back to Kelly Gramlich because we have so much to do by way of Hump Day headlines and so little time in which to do it because Waldub Tulin Road Race is going to be on for 3 to 7 today.
We do, Quack. We do.
Get
all
excited,
right.
People.
A few more Hump Day headlines to close down the show. This one is from USA Today. Ben Roethlisberger's haircut may have landed him in hot water with Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf.
Oh, no.
Yes. I don't know if you saw the video that went pretty viral on Twitter. Ben Roethlisberger declared when he got hurt that he would not shave his beard or cut his hair. Feel sorry for his wife. Until he would be able to throw in the way he worded it, until he was able to throw an NFL pass. Okay, and this was the injury from last season. So you see a video of him, and his head is buzzed, his beard is shaved, and he's throwing passes to Juju Smith-Schuster and James Conner, and Juju's saying, he's back, and everyone's super excited, right? But then the question is being asked, where did he get this haircut? Because technically, you cannot go get a haircut yet in Pennsylvania.
Right.
So Governor Tom Wolf, he did not directly call out Big Ben in his briefing on Tuesday, but he did say that no Pennsylvanian should take the chance of going to a barbershop unprotected. He said, quote, "My concern is just a general concern. Anybody who puts himself or herself in harm's way is something that I think we should have to try to avoid. When you go to something like a barbershop and you're not protected, I don't care who you are, the chances of that virus actually wreaking havoc on your life increases. I don't personally think any Pennsylvanian ought to take that chance. I certainly don't want to take that chance." It's interesting because I feel like he's saying, the reason he says specifically barbershop and I don't care who you are, that he is subtweeting, if you will, Ben Roethlisberger in that discussion. So this scandal has gotten even bigger because Norman's Cutting Edge Barbershop, which we've found out is Ben Roethlisberger's home barbershop, felt the need to release a statement saying that he did a personal favor for Ben Roethlisberger, giving him a haircut as they are close personal friends, but no money was received or exchanged. And it is a full paragraph statement that he felt the need to release about the haircut.
I don't love this. It just, again, it feels like snitching. It feels like people being like, "Hey, you look like you've cared about your appearance in the last 3 weeks. Where did you look like you care?" Like, people get a haircut at home. Like, I don't. My hair looks a
mess.
Yeah,
but he's literally saying that he didn't.
Right.
That this guy gave him a haircut.
That's right.
And beard trim.
So, but then you've got, it really doesn't make any sense. Like, I don't know. I have this idea. It's ingrained in my brain. Maybe I'm wrong for having this idea. I feel like it pretty much exists. Just because some famous person gets to do something doesn't mean that everybody does. I assume that the more rich and famous you are, the more perks that you get. So you might have access to a really good haircut, a really good barber. You might get somebody to come to your home and do something that people like me and you, Kelly, we might not have access to, right? So I understand the abundance of caution here, where we're trying to ward against millions of Pennsylvanians going, "Well, if Roethlisberger got one, then why can't I?" And all that stuff. The reality is they're already mad about way other stuff besides that. They're mad that they can't get a haircut anyway, and like whatever else.
Right.
But they're not they're not like, "Well, I was fine with it before, but Roethlisberger got a haircut, and that's just not okay." I don't think that people I don't think that people lack understanding that just because Ben Roethlisberger was able to get a haircut means that I should be able to get. Maybe because
I'm going to go bang on the barbershop door right now and demand
one. We live
in
actual 2020 globe. On actual 2020 globe, rich people get haircuts before the rest of us. That's just the bottom line. So I'm glad that we got to like make all these statements or whatever. I'm just not that outraged if I see someone looking right.
Looking
like they just got a cut.
I'm the most outraged that because of all that went down, this guy was forced to give this haircut for free.
I know.
Ben, you should pay this guy.
He probably will later.
Yeah, or he probably did.
Maybe he paid him in
some nice bottles of wine or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure Ben Roethlisberger is doing that and not signing this picture for you.
Don't worry. I didn't pay him. To provide a service.
Let me just say, if I ever get good at anything else and I do that service for a professional athlete and they show up with a bottle of wine and not something signed by them or some bit of gear, I'm going to feel slighted and
maybe
we're probably not friends anymore. Just saying.
You never know.
Well, maybe so. Maybe so. That's a really good point.
Okay, Kwok. Our next headline comes to us from the Bay Area. And I'm sure that you will take this headline seriously. To me, the headline made me laugh out loud. And then we can get into the details. And I'm sure for you it's very serious, but this headline is absurd.
Okay.
From Yahoo Sports. San Francisco Giants manager says no spitting will be, quote, tremendous challenge for Major League Baseball.
It is. It's going to be a challenge.
Look, I get it, but that headline is absurd. It is absurd.
Oh, man.
So the Giants' new manager, Gabe Kapler, explained this week that spitting has become so ingrained in baseball's culture that breaking the habit will be a, quote, tremendous challenge for the players and for himself personally. We have another quote here from former Minnesota Twins outfielder Tony Oliva, who once said that when you play the game, you have to have something to entertain you. Otherwise, your brain goes crazy. And that's why people chew gum or spit sunflower seeds or spit gum or whatever they do.
Spit gum?
They were talking about how...
What are you thinking?
Listen. This is a real thing. According to Kapler, he said, this is his routine. When the game begins, I start with some coffee. It's part of my routine. I quickly transition to gum. Lots of gum. Not just a couple pieces. A lot of gum. I don't like the sweetness, but I like the size of the gum. My normal behavior is I spit a lot of the gum juice out.
Yep.
So that's what I'm talking about, spitting gum. From that's there, right. I transition to seeds. Sunflower seeds in the middle of the game. As much as you can, you're just spitting the seeds on the ground. I'm not alone. So many players and staff have routines like the one I just described. Different but similar. They're all going to have to stop these routines. This is going to be a tremendous challenge.
It actually is. I mean, that's real.
These are the challenges in the world that we're facing today. No spitting!
Gabe Kapler, by the way, former Greenville Drive manager, I believe. I think he was the drive manager for a year. Here's the reality, Kelly. This is not going to shock you at all. I, too, have routines that I go through. When I briefly coached, like, youth sports, I helped my dad a couple years. I was an umpire for a time.
Did you spit when you were an umpire?
Oh, 100%. You got to. You got to hydrate and spit. That's what you do. If I'm even watching a game, here are two ways that I might go, okay? I'm either going to get way too much gum so that flavor stays for as long as possible.
Sure.
And you just chew
what
on it.
What kind
like,
of
you don't
gum?
Do anything. I mean, double bubble is the right. So like four pieces of double bubble is a good size.
That was always fun to get kinda, at the Little League Park. You could get five pieces for a quarter.
Yeah. You just kind of chipmunk it. Like over your cheek for a little bit and then switch sides and maybe chew on a little bit, especially
great
if you're talking.
For your teeth. I'm sure the dentist listening are loving this.
Yeah, I got a bunch of cavities when I was younger. Or sunflower seeds. And really, my sunflower seed thing, I don't even care to eat the sunflower seeds.
You just want
the salt. I just
need
the salt.
Yep.
And so I'll spit the seeds out. I don't even care. I just spit the whole thing out. Crack it, get the salt on the inside, spit them out, go through a bunch of sunflower seeds. If you told me that I couldn't do that stuff, even watching a game, like in a setting where you're not talking 30,000 people. Like if I go to a ball game, I'm getting a hot dog or something. But if you're talking about like going to watch a high school game or something, yeah, I'm getting seeds. I'm getting
gum.
So
what does that say about your sport? That you can't even bear to watch it or ump it or coach it without chewing something and just gnawing on gum or sunflower seeds?
I mean, when you say couldn't bear to watch it. I mean, I watch a lot in my house without
and to
without
be fair, you watch a lot
gum.
Of it with just a bucket of popcorn.
That's true. A lot of popcorn. It's just, you know, there is more downtime in the sport. There's a slow rhythm to sports that lends itself to some folks chew tobacco. You can't do that anymore by rule. And we're really serious about it this time. You definitely can't do it this time. But the gum and the sunflower seeds, it's part of the culture.
Just of all the challenges we're facing in today's world, not spitting as a Major League Baseball player or manager. Godspeed, guys. Best of luck. It's a big challenge.
Feel for those players trying to figure it out. You know what? Just give us a game. I don't care what you do when you're out there. Stop griping about money. Give us a game.
All right, Kwok. Our final headline of the day comes to us from the great state of Florida. This is my favorite Florida man in quite some time. This is from Lee County, Florida. Florida man dives into Bass Pro Shop fish tank. A Florida man jumped into a fish tank at a Bass Pro Shop on Mother's Day. A video posted to social media shows. The video shows a man walking up the stairs. He dives into the tank at the store at the Gulf Coast Town Center and then runs off. A manager followed the man out of the store and saw him leave in a silver sedan. Lee County Sheriff's Office believe the man is Daniel Armendariz, 27 years old, who is still on the loose. He could face felony criminal mischief charges as well as trespassing. The incident happened on May 10th, but was not reported until May 12th. Don't know what's going on there. Bass Pro Shop spent $3,000 decontaminating the tank. This is not the first time the fish tank at this store has been used in this kind of prank.
Stop.
Three high school students dove into the same tank in 2011, then got out and ran. Oh my gosh. He has been previously arrested for robbery, aggravated battery, and sale or delivery of drugs. So he has bad news. And this time he just chose to jump into a Bass Pro Shop tank.
Do we know? Did I miss it? Was alcohol a factor in this?
We haven't caught him yet, so we're really not sure.
Oh, okay.
We're not sure.
And we can't make any inferences.
He also decided to post on social media. He's still on the loose, but he posted on social media.
Oh, good.
So I'm not sure how that's working.
Yeah, that's how you hide from the FBI and the authorities. Let them triangulate your phone via Facebook. That's nice. Good job, idiot.
He said, I already have a lawyer working on this accusation. I find it petty how you detectives and officers are looking for me as if I've killed somebody and the whole task force is working on me. And he's talking about how all he did was jump in the tank. This is not a good thing, Kwok. This is a very serious prank, as Bass Pro Shops said in a statement.
We should give this guy a medal because of, and depending on where your community is, recidivism rates going back to jail may be particularly high. This guy seems to be de-escalating. You mentioned robbery of aggravated assault.
Yeah, selling drugs, and now he's just jumping in fish tanks.
It feels like he's moving in the right direction. Let's keep this guy going on the right path. Don't cart this guy find him. You know, give him a fine, you know, some community service, whatever. But most importantly, we need to tell him that we're proud of him, that he's moving away from his life of crime, and he might not have just been able to leave it entirely right off the bat.
Kwok, can you imagine if you're the manager of that store and those high school kids jumped into your fish tank 10 years ago and you were like, okay. That's never going to happen again.
Son of a gun.
This guy jumps into your fish tank.